Osho, Tao, the Three Treasures, Volume 3. Talks and Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 10.
The first question. You have said that there are no goals in life, no purpose, and yet we are all here with enlightenment as our goal. Please speak on this. If you are here with enlightenment as your goal, you cannot be here. Physically, you may appear to be here, but you cannot be with me. The goal is in the future. I am here, and the mind which is goal-oriented is bound to be in the future. We will never meet. I know you are here to attain something. That's why you are missing it. I am here to persuade you to drop the very idea of attaining anything whatsoever. Enlightenment, moksha, nirvana, God included. If you drop this goal-oriented mind, and there is none other than goal-oriented mind, there is no other mind. If you drop it, you are enlightened. Enlightenment is not a search. It is a realization. It is not a goal. It is the very nature of life itself. As life is, it is enlightened. It needs nothing to be added, to be improved. Life is perfect. It is not moving from imperfection to perfection. It is moving from perfection to perfection. You are here to attain something that is functioning as a barrier. Drop that barrier. Just be here. Forget about any purpose. Life cannot have any purpose. Life is the purpose. How it can have any other purpose? Otherwise, you will be in an infinite regress. Then that purpose will have another purpose. Then that another purpose will have another purpose. Life has no purpose. And that's why it is so beautiful. Hindus have called it a leela, a play. It is not even a game. Now, in the West, the word game has become very, very important. Hundreds of books have been published within 2-3 years with the title Game, The Master Game, The Ultimate Game, The Game People Play, and so on and so forth. But there is a difference between game and play. Hindus have called it play, not game, because even a game has something as a purpose, a result to be attained, victory to be achieved. The opponent has to be conquered. Then a play becomes a game. Then it becomes serious. Grown-ups play games. Children only play. just the very activity is enough unto itself. It has an intrinsic end. There is no goal added to it. Life is a lila. It is a play. And the moment you are ready to play, you are enlightened. Try to understand from some other dimension. You are already that which you are trying to be. The more you try, the more you will miss. You leave all effort. You simply accept yourself. You just be that. Suddenly it is there. It has always been there. But you were seeking so seriously. That was the only cause of missing it. You are here to attain something, enlightenment, samadhi, satori, or something. To me, all those words are nonsense. Because they again give you a new line of desiring. They again open a door of desire. In the world, you desire money, power, prestige. Then you get fed up with it. Then you see the whole thing is just rubbish. Even if you get, you are defeated. If you don't get, you are defeated. Then you come to feel that this whole thing is nonsense. Now suddenly you start playing new games. Enlightenment, meditation, yoga, God, the other world, the other source. Again, the mind is at ease. A new world of desires has opened. Now you will be after these goals. And money is not so elusive as meditation. This world, at least, is solid. That soul, that world, the other world, is absolutely fantasy. Now you are in a deeper ditch than before. With the first you could realize that it is useless. With the second, now it will take millions of lives to realize that this too is useless. When one person comes to discover that all goals are useless, with no exception, all goals are useless, then there is nothing to do. One just has to be. One relaxes. And one relaxes so totally because there is nothing to do, there is no tension. Suddenly your boundaries melt as snow melting in the morning sun. With nothing to do, you disappear. The ego disappears. With nothing to do, nothing to be, nothing to achieve, who you will be, the whole identity evaporates. This is enlightenment. Then you start a totally different way of life. You start being playful. You start being alive moment to moment. Nowhere to go. Whatsoever the life gives, you accept it with deep gratitude. Grace happens to you. This is what I'll call to become a god. The moment you start playing, living in the moment, you have become a god. I am here to persuade you that you are already gods. You may be here to become gods. That's your trip. I am not concerned with it. I know what I am here far, just to persuade you to look at your own face once again, to search within and not to go without searching for something which doesn't exist. Life is a purposeless play, play of infinite forces. Beautiful if you don't have an achiever's mind. Ugly if you have ambition to become something, to be something, to do something. Relax. Drop the future completely. Only this moment exists. And this moment is eternity. And only this life is all that is there. Don't think of the other sort. Just the other day I was telling the Chinese allegory. The man returned from the middle of the river. Why he returned from the middle of the river? Because there is no other source. This is the only source. And why he started laughing? Because he suddenly realized he himself is the Buddha whom he has been seeking. Zen masters teach to their disciples that meditating, if you someday come across Buddha, kill him immediately. Don't spare a single moment. Kill him immediately. Otherwise he will lead you astray. They are right. While you are meditating, Krishna comes with his flute. It's so beautiful. Again you are dreaming. Again you are caught in a dream and desire. And Jesus comes, and you are caught in the web of the mind. It is a spider's web. And then Buddha comes, and you forget yourself. The Zen masters say, kill the Buddha immediately. Clear the way. Don't allow anybody else to be there. That is, don't allow any goal to be there. Just be total, alone, in your absolute purity. This is enlightenment. I should repeat, because I know you will forget and forget and forget. You are already that which you are seeking. Let this will be the basic mantra. If you can understand this mantra, you have understood all. Give it a try. Two goals you have been giving. Too many lives you have already given to them. Now try to live moment to moment, as if there is no future. In the beginning it will be only as if. But by and by you will become aware that as if is the only reality. In the beginning it may be just like acting. Soon you will realize that acting is the only reality. You have come with a goal, but I won't allow you to remain with a goal. If you don't escape me, the goal is bound to drop. Just hang around a little more, and the goal is bound to drop. Either I can be here with you or the goal. You have to choose. There is much, a lot of difference, not only of quantity but quality. A reaction is out of the past, a response is out of the present. you react out of the past old patterns. Somebody insults you. Suddenly the old mechanism starts functioning. In the past, people have insulted you. And you have behaved in a certain way. You behave in the same way again. You are not responding to this insult and this man. You are simply repeating an old habit. It has a different flavor. You are just functioning like a robot. You have a certain mechanism inside you. You push the button, you say, this man has insulted me, and you react. The reaction is not to the real situation. It is something projected. You have seen the path in this man. It happened. Buddha was sitting under a tree talking to his disciples. A man came and he spit on his face. He wiped and asked the man, what next? What do you want to say next? The man was a little puzzled, because he never expected that when you spit on somebody's face, he will ask, now, what next? He has insulted people, and they had become angry, and they have reacted. They had smiled. They tried to bribe this man. But Buddha was neither he was angry, nor in any way offended, nor in any way cowardly. Just matter of fact, he said, what next? There was no reaction on his part. His disciples became angry. They reacted. Buddha's closest disciple, Anand, said, this is too much, and we cannot tolerate. We are teachings with you, and we will see this man, and we will show him what he has done. He has to be punished for it. Otherwise, everybody will start doing things like this. Buddha said, you keep silent. He has not offended me, but you are offending me. He is a new stranger. May have heard something about me from somebody. Has made some idea, a notion. He has not spit on me. He has spit on his notion, his idea of me. Because he does not know me at all, so how he can spit on me? He must have heard from people something about me, that this man is an atheist, a dangerous man who is throwing people off their track, a revolutionary, a corrupter. He must have heard something about me. He has a notion, an idea. He has spit on his own idea. If you think it deeply, Buddha said, he has spit on his own mind. I am not a part to it. And I can see this poor man. And he must have something else to say. Because this is a way of saying something. Spitting is a way of saying something. There are moments when you feel that the language is important. In deep love, in intense anger, in hate, in prayer. There are intense moments when language is important. Then you have to do something. When you are in deep love, you kiss a person or embrace the person. You are saying something. You are more puzzled. And Buddha said, I am more offended by you because you know me. And you have lived for years with me. And still you react. Puzzled, confused, the man returned back. He could not sleep the whole night. It is difficult when you see a Buddha. It is difficult to sleep again the way as you used to sleep before. And what has happened? He was trembling all over and perspiring. He had never come. He has settled his own mind, his whole mind and his whole pattern, his whole past. Next morning he was back there. He threw himself into Buddha's feet. Buddha asked him again, "What next?" This too is a way of saying something that cannot be said in language. When you come and touch my feet, you are saying something which cannot be said ordinarily, for which all words are a little narrow. It cannot be contained in them. Buddha said, "Look, Anand, this man is again here. He is saying something. This man is a man of deep emotions. The man looked at Buddha and said, "Forgive me for whatsoever I have done yesterday." Buddha said, "Forgive, but I am not the same man to whom you did it. The Ganges goes on flowing. It is never the same Ganges again. Every man is a river. The man you spit upon is no more here. I look just like him, but I am not the same. Much has happened in these 24 hours. The river has flown so much. Only in the appearance I look the same. So I cannot forgive you, because I have no grudge against you. And you are also new. I can see you are not the same man who had come yesterday, because that man was angry. He was anger. He spat. And you are bowing in my feet, touching my feet. How can you be the same man? You are not the same man. So let us forget about it. Those both, the man who is spat and the man on whom he is spat, are no more. Come closer. Let us talk something else. This is response. Reaction is out of past. If you react out of old habits, out of mind, then you are not responding. To be responsive is to be totally alive in this moment, here, now. Response is a beautiful phenomenon. It is life. Reaction is dead, ugly, rotten. It is a corpse. 99% you react and you call it response. Rarely it happens in your life when you respond. But whenever it happens, you have a glimpse. Whenever it happens, the door to the unknown opens. Go back to your home and look at your wife as a response, not as a reaction. I see people, they may have lived with the woman for 30 years, 40 years. They have stopped looking at her. They know she is the old wife, the old woman. They think they know. But the river has been flowing all the time. This woman is not the same to whom they got married. It is a past phenomenon. That woman is nowhere exists now. This is totally a new woman. Every moment you are being born anew. Every moment you die, and every moment you are born. But have you looked lately at your wife, your mother, your father, your friend? You have stopped looking because you think they are all old. So what is the point of looking at? Go back and look again with fresh eyes, as you would look at a stranger. And you will be surprised that how much this old woman has changed. Tremendous changes happen every day. It is a flux. Everything goes flowing. Nothing is frozen. But the mind is a dead thing. It is a frozen phenomena. If you act from the frozen mind, you live a dead life. You don't live really. You are already in the grave. Drop reactions and allow more and more responses. To be responsive is to be responsible. To be responsive, to be responding, is to be sensitive. But sensitive to here and now. Third question, if one has no desire for one's own enlightenment, but only for that of others, does one have a problem? No, you won't have a problem, but you create problem for others, and many problems for others. There are many good doers. They only do harm. Never be a good doer. Because good cannot be done. You can be good and then it flows. It is not an act on your part. You don't do it. When you do good, harm results. So all people who go on trying good to others are the most mischievous people. They may call themselves servants of the people, servants of God, and all sorts of bombastic words they may use about themselves. But they are hiding a fact, a totally different fact under these words. They are the mischief makers. If you are not desiring your own enlightenment, how can you desire it for others? If it is really something worth, you will first desire it for yourself. If it is worthless, then you can desire it for others. Once it happened, Mullah Nasruddin was working with a boss. The man gave him a bottle of brandy. He was surprised because this man has never given anything. He could not believe. Next day the boss asked how it was. Mullah said it was perfectly right. The boss could not understand what he means by perfectly right. So he asked, what do you mean by saying that it was perfectly right? Mullah said, had it been better, you would not have given it to me. Had it been worse, I would have given it to somebody else. You give things only when they are worthless. You desire enlightenment for others? How can you desire it for others if you have not desired it for yourself? If you have not tasted it yourself, how can you help others to be enlightened? Please don't do such a foolish thing. There are many who are doing it. And because of them, man lives in much unnecessary confusion. First, desire for yourself, and know well that by desiring you will not attain it, but by desiring you will come to understand that desiring has to be dropped. But remember, you cannot drop something which you don't have. Enlightenment is attained by dropping the desire for it. But you have to have desire to drop. Otherwise, everybody will become enlightened. Whoever is not desiring enlightenment will become enlightened. So don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that those who don't desire enlightenment will become enlightened. No. I'm saying those who drop desiring enlightenment, they will become enlightened. But to drop a thing, you have to have it first. Desire, and desire intensely, go completely mad, desiring in it, and then you become capable to drop it. When you feel the frustration, a great frustration happens before enlightenment, exactly just 1 minute, 1 second before somebody becomes enlightened, the deepest frustration happens. One falls to the greatest hell. And only then, Christian mystics have called that moment the dark night of the soul. It is a dark night of the soul. And before the morn, the night is more and more getting darker and darker. The more the night becomes dark and black, the morning comes nearer. But remember, I'm not saying don't desire. I'm saying desire, and desire hard, and desire totally, so that that beautiful moment comes in your life where you can drop desire and become enlightened. When you are enlightened, there will be no need to desire for others. You will simply be in such a way, your very vibes will be such that people will be helped. Become a door to those who are seeking. Nothing on your part that you are doing something. I'm not doing anything here. I'm just being here. That just being here is enough. It is a magnetic force. That just being here is enough. I allow you to be with me. Something will happen out of it. A master is nothing more than a catalytic agent. He never does anything. Just his presence. A master is not a doer. He lives in absolute passivity, not doing anything. Because he knows the art how to do without doing. Things simply happen on their own. The disciple thinks the master has helped. The master knows that he has done nothing. The disciple thinks much has been done to him. And he is also right because much has happened to him. But his understanding is not clear because he thinks how something can happen if it has not been done. That's the problem with the disciple. He thinks the master is doing so much for me. Because the disciple cannot understand how things can happen, such great things, without anybody doing them, I'm not doing. Then the master must be doing them to me. The master is also not doing. The disciple is opening himself to the master, and the master is available. That's all. He is a catalytic agent. His presence does, not he. And the disciple feels tremendously grateful. And his gratefulness has meaning, because alone he could not achieve. And this man has done so much. But when he will become enlightened, then he will laugh. Then he will join the master in the laughter. In Zen there is a tradition that it has happened many times. When a disciple becomes enlightened, he hits the master. The master has been hitting him for many, many years. But when he becomes enlightened, he hits the master. Just to show that whole thing has been such a game. You were not doing anything. And I was thinking you are doing, and so many things were happening. And nothing was needed, in fact, because I was already that which I was seeking. But it is a very beautiful gesture, hitting the master. It shows now the disciple himself has become part of the master. He himself has become a master in his own right. And the master laughs because the disciple has arrived. The fourth question, why is it that the habits I judge bad for me, smoking, overeating, etc., are the most persistent? They will be. If you judge them bad, they will be persistent, because you are creating a relationship with them. To call anything bad is to create a relationship. To judge a thing is to be related with it. And whenever you call a thing bad, why you call it bad? You call it bad because it defeats you. It is powerful. You call it bad because you are important before it. And by calling names, nobody is helped. So the first thing to do is stop judging. If you want to smoke, smoke. Smoke meditatively. Forget what others say about it. Smoking can be such a beautiful meditation. Don't fight with it. Smoke meditatively. Create perfect rings. And enjoy the whole thing. And suddenly you will one day find the need has disappeared. The whole thing looks so foolish. Not that you judge. Because when you judge, then it is either good or bad. When you don't judge, something simply drops if it is useless. If you meditate while smoking, you will find that meditation can be done without smoking and better. So why unnecessarily bring this smoke in between? One day you will put the cigarette back on the table, on the ashtray, and you will never take it again. But it is not a judgment. Whenever you say something is bad, you are giving roots to it. And it is always so, good is not so powerful as bad. Because good is that which others say to you, do it. And bad is that which you want to do. Of course, it can never be, the good can never be as powerful as bad. Because bad is that which you would like to do, and good is that which others are trying to force on you to do. you resist that good. It looks like slavery, a bondage, and bad looks like freedom. If you are forced into heaven, you will run away from it and fall into hell. Because he will say, at least here is freedom. And the saints, the so-called saints and religious people, have done so terrible harm to human consciousness that it is incalculable. By forcing good things on people, rather force bad things on people, so that bad becomes associated with bondage, with others' egos, and good becomes associated with one's own ego. People will be better. It happened, I used to live with a friend. He became worried one day because he has seen his son is smoking. The son is very small, not more than 10 years of age. He was very much worried, a very good man and religious man. So he said, what to do? I told him, bring a packet to me and send your son. I forced the boy to smoke 20 cigarettes. And I threatened him, if he does not finish the whole packet, I will beat him. Crying and weeping and smoking and coughing. And I'm standing there with a stick to beat. Finished. He told me that now, nobody can ever force me. It is better if bad is associated with bondage, but it is not associated. Your father doesn't want you to smoke. Your mother doesn't want to smoke. The Surgeon General doesn't want you to smoke. Nobody wants you to smoke. Suddenly, an urge to be free from all this, and you would like to smoke. That gives you a feeling of freedom, of independence. That gives you a feeling that you are now on your own. You don't care what all these people say. They are really forcing you to smoke. Prohibited thing. And you are forcing people to do the thing. Prohibit anything and it will become more and more prevalent. Allow and it falls out of use. So what to do? Smoke with meditation. Don't worry. Enjoy it. If you can enjoy it, the whole power from it will be gone. The power is very symbolic. You are rebelling against your parents, against the society. These are simple gestures of rebellion. That you don't like things as they are. But rebelling against them, you are harming yourself. That's your foolishness. Cigarette is not bad, simply harmful. It is not sin. It is simply ignorance. So nothing bad about it. If you want to enjoy ignorance, enjoy. How does it matter if you live 1 year less? You would have lived 70 years, now you will live 67. If you go on smoking 2 packets of cigarette every day, 1 year you will lose, but what? How does it matter? 69 you are going to waste, you would have wasted 70. Less means 1 year less of your nonsense doings you would be doing in the world. In a way it is good. You are gone. The earth is less burdened. Don't be worried about these things and don't create judgments. Don't judge. If you enjoy, you enjoy. If you don't enjoy, you stop. No judgment is needed. No morality should be brought to change these things. Otherwise, you will be never able to change them. The more you will push them, negate them, the more powerful they will become. Because whenever you try to push something away from you, you are showing interest. Whenever you say, I'm not going to do this, you know your unconscious is saying, do it, it is beautiful. So don't create such vicious circles. I was saying just the other day to you, a Zen monk saying, walking, walk, sleeping, sleep, eating, eat, above all, don't wobble. I would eat, smoking, smoke, above all, don't bobble. Just take it simple. If you take it simple, what you will see? You will see the whole nonsense behind it. It is, smoking is not the thing. You are denying something through it, rebelling against something. Your father is standing there. You were such a small child, and the father was so powerful, and he said, never smoke, and you wanted to deny his authority. You started smoking. The mother there, the priest in the church, the Sunday class in the, otherwise you will be thrown in hell. You never liked that priest. You never liked that sermon. You were forced to go to the Sunday school. In fact, it looked like hell. Out of it, you wanted to rebel, to put your ego right. Everybody is suppressing you. Everybody is pushing and forcing and pulling, and everybody trying to manipulate you. And you went into the bathroom and you smoked, and everything was put right. You have rebelled. You felt good. Smoking has helped you to feel good, that you are not so important. You can rebel. This father may be very, very powerful, but you can even deceive him. And this mother may be very, very all-knowing, intuitive, but she does not know a bit that you are smoking. When you smoke silently, meditatively, all these things will be revealed to you, how it has happened. And once you come to know the cause, it is not the cigarette that is the cause. Cigarette is just a symptom. Cause is very deep and hidden. Once you know the cause, now it is for you. The father may be gone and dead, and you are still taking revenge. And now you can understand that he never meant bad for you. He may not have done good. He may have tried to do good in such a wrong way that the ultimate result has been bad, but his intention was good. He wanted to help you. He may not have known how to help you. In fact, he harmed you, but you cannot doubt his good intention. Suddenly you are reconciled with the father, reconciled with the mother, and the cigarette drops from your hands without any act on your part. You are reconciled. It was a rebellion. Now there is no point. You understand, and the thing is finished. And do the same for other things, and by you will see things change. The more you understand them, the more is the possibility of their change. And that change has a grace to it, because it is not forced. I am not against anything. I am only against inattentiveness, unawareness. Smoke with fully alert mind, and you will reveal, you will discover many things associated with it. It will become a primal therapy. You will go deeper and deeper and deeper to your childhood, and you will come to the fact from where it started, how it has such a grip on you. From where this grip comes, there must be much emotion involved. Just smoking in and out cannot have grips. So many millions of people are smoking, doing such a stupid thing, wasting money on it, life on it, suffering thousand types of diseases, but still continuing. There must be more behind it than appears to the naked eyes. It is not simply a cigarette. It is very symbolic. It is a symptom. Deep down, many layers of many things are associated. You simply drop the cigarette and those causes are still within you. They will force you to pick up the cigarette again. Understand. And without understanding, never make any effort to change anything. Understanding changes. Only understanding changes and transforms. Let understanding be the only law. The fifth question, if I don't do anything, I find that I start feeling invisible. Instead of feeling rooted in the earth, is it possible to be both? Yes, it is not only possible, it is absolutely necessary. Whenever it is happening, it will happen on both the ways. It will happen together. When you are not doing anything, the ego feels uprooted, because the ego is the doer. The more you do, the ego feels good, feels rooted, feels on the earth, has a foothold. When you are not doing anything, the ego is invisible. It loses its force. And you are identified with the ego, so you feel you are becoming invisible, you are becoming vaporous, evaporating. You are losing solidness. This is one part. The another part, you will soon become aware that if you allow this invisibleness to happen, this evaporation to happen, and you don't fall again on the ego and start doing something, then you will see that you are rooted. That rootedness is of the being, and the disappearance is of the ego. And before the ego disappears completely and you come to realize the rootedness of your being, there is going to be a gap, and that gap is the dark night. In that gap, you will be very apprehensive, afraid. What is happening? Are you going mad? Are you losing everything? Because all that you have now is ego identity. If it slips out of your hand, you will feel that everything is gone. And there will be a temptation to cling to old things so you feel rooted. Don't be worried. Let the ego go and evaporate in the sky. If you can remain in that blank state for a few days, the more you accept it, the lesser will be the interval. If you can accept it totally, in the next second, you will feel the rootedness. But it is difficult to accept it totally. You are doubtful. The mind says, what is happening? The old house has fallen. And where is the new? The old being is gone, and where is the new? But a time is needed, a gap is needed in which the old house has disappeared and all the turmoil and chaos that was created by the disappearance of the old house has cleared, and your eyes are clear and there is no smoke and dust in them, then you suddenly become able to see the new house, the being. It happens together. So don't be afraid. Allow it to happen. Help it to happen. The sixth question, when I become aware of my thoughts or my breathing, they immediately change. Is this natural or an ingrained habit of subtly not accepting what is? It is natural. Whenever you become aware of anything, you bring a new quality to it. It changes. If you become aware of your breathing, the breathing will change its rhythm. You don't try to change it. There is no need to make any effort. Simply you become alert that you are breathing in and out, and there will be a change felt. The rhythm will not be the same, because now you are consciously breathing. First you were unconsciously breathing. Now something new has come into it, consciousness. You walk. Ordinarily you walk unconsciously, there is no need. The body works as a mechanism. But then you walk consciously, bring consciousness to it. Suddenly you will see that your walk has taken a different quality. It is more graceful, more aesthetic, more beautiful. And you are not dragging, rather deep down you have started dancing. When the breathing changes with consciousness, you will feel a subtle silence surrounding you, suddenly. With the change of the breath, your whole vital body changes. You feel more alive, more intensely alive. Whatsoever you do, there will be more totality in doing it. If you eat, you will eat more totally. There will be less thoughts in the mind roaming about. If you walk with conscious breathing, you will see that the mind is more centered. There is no inner chattering. And then you will be able to see more clearly. With a breathing conscious, you will see the beauty of flowers more intensely. They will have more colors than they ordinarily have. As if something like LSD has been released within your being. You will see trees more green. And you will see each tree a different green. There are thousands shades of green. You simply see one green, because you don't see at all. Otherwise, each tree has its own green, and each leaf has its own being. The more you become aware, the more life will be beautiful. It is a cosmic dance. It is a cosmic symphony. But when your being is in a symphony, only then you come to be in tune with it. It is natural. But remember, become very, very it slowly aware. Don't force concentration on breathing. And these are two different things. You can force concentration, then whatsoever I have said will not happen. Then on the contrary, you will feel drained. If you concentrate on breathing, that means you force yourself on breathing. You narrow down your consciousness and look at your breathing. You will be in a tense mood. Then you will not be able to see the flowers, the sun, the sky, the sands and the sea. No, because when you will see them, you will forget your concentration. Concentration is not awareness. Awareness is totally different. You are simply aware without any effort in it. If you forget that too, is okay. Forget. Don't feel guilty about it. When you again remember, again look. A relaxed awareness is needed. Otherwise, there can be such a strain on the breathing, it can be fatal. It can be dangerous to the body. And you can create many illnesses out of it. So, not concentration, but simple alertness. It gives really a totally different quality. You will feel very, very graceful, in tune, at home. The seventh question, you said recently that to reach enlightenment, you first have to go through a total frustration where you completely lose hope. But it seems impossible to lose hope when you know that a master is helping you by his presence. You don't be worried about that. I will see to it that you become completely frustrated. Eighth question. Lao Tzu seems to be the most truthful man, but George Gurdjieff used to paint space canaries. Lao Tzu says to do nothing and realize. Gurdjieff says only a superhuman effort will do. Is Gurdjieff's realization as great as Lao Tzu's? How do you explain the difference? Yes, there are no degrees in enlightenment. Either it is or it is not. Lao Tzu and Gurdjieff are both enlightened. And there are no degrees. So nobody is more enlightened and nobody is less enlightened. But their working is different. Their time is different. The age they live is different. The people they have to tackle and the disciples they get are different. Lao Tzu lived in a very primitive world. People were very simple, humble, not tense, not in a hurry. In fact, they had no time sense. They were more natural. Gurdjieff lived in a totally opposite time. Lao Tzu lived in the East and Gurdjieff lived in the West. And in 20th century, the maddest century ever, almost everybody is neurotic. Gurdjieff has to devise different things for these different type of people. This type of man has not existed in Lao Tzu's time. If sometimes he may have come across some men as an exception, but now that is the rule. And the man who was the rule at Lao Tzu's time is now the exception. So everything has changed. Lao Tzu seems to be the most truthful man. He is. And Gurdjieff does not seem you to be so truthful. He is also as much truthful as Lao Tzu. But he has compassion for you. And if he needs to lie to help you, he lies. And you are such a liar that Lao Tzu won't be much help to you. Even Gurdjieff finds it difficult to help you. He is just the right type of person for the West. Lao Tzu, in the first place, will not appeal you. Because he is so simple and so innocent. In fact, if he was born in the 20th century, he would have been called the idiot. Even in those old days, there were people who thought that he is idiot. He himself says that everybody seems to be very, very clever, only I am stupid. That too, 25 centuries before. Now, everybody would have thought him idiot. Not only that, if he was born in the West, they may have even psychoanalyzed and treated him to bring him back to normal. They have done that same thing to many other people. In Western mental asylums, many people are there who are not mad, who are simply very innocent people. But they cannot be liars and they cannot be in tune with this lying century. That's their difficulty. Gurdjieff was exactly the right person. He lied very easily. But those lies were meant to help you. You need lies. Gurdjieff says superhuman effort is needed. And Lao Tzu says no effort. Both are superhuman. When you do superhuman effort, you come to a point where Lao Tzu becomes immediately meaningful to you. Only after passing through Gurdjieff, you will be able to drop all effort. Now, immediate approach towards Lao Tzu is not possible. In fact, you are so cunning and clever that if you listen to Lao Tzu and read to Lao Tzu, it is not possible that you will drop effort. More possible is you will cling to laziness. And I see here people, when I talk about Lao Tzu, they start asking questions, the right questions. Then what about in the ashram where we have to work? Should we stop working? They want to stop working. Not that they have understood. Because if they had understood, they will not ask. Lao Tzu is not saying stop working. He is saying stop making effort. Do without making effort. Do naturally. He is not helping you to become lazy. That don't do anything and just lie down. And that too is good. If you don't expect others to come and feed you, That too is perfectly good. But then you are looking all around. People are coming or not to respect you as a great Paramahansa, one who has realized. You will become lazy. Gurdjieff is perfectly right. He says, make superhuman efforts. He forces people to make efforts. He drives them to such a point that beyond which there is nowhere to go. Then the effort drops by itself. You cannot drop it. You have been so clinging to it. I was reading once somebody's memoir. Gurdjieff was making an ashram near Paris in Fontainebleau. The structure was being built, and he told one man to continuously work, the carpenter, a disciple. Don't go to sleep, you go on working. 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours, and he was working. And after 36 hours, Gurdjieff suddenly rushed to the place where he was. He was sitting on top of the roof, completely asleep, with instruments in the hand. If a little noise was made, he will fall from there, and it was dangerous. So Gurdjieff said everybody to keep quiet. Just like a cat, he moved to the roof, got hold of the man and shake him. The man opened his eyes. He could not believe where he is. What has happened? 36 hours of continuous work. And that day, Gurdjieff told him, now you need not work. It dropped itself. Because if the man had dropped it, he would have come down to sleep. If the man had dropped the effort, then he would have come down, because it is dangerous. Sitting on the roof, you can fall. But it was not a question of his conscious decision. He did whatsoever he could do consciously. A moment came, simply he slipped into his sleep. It was nothing on his part. Everything stopped. Even the instruments were in his hand. On his part, he was still ready to work. He may be even working in his dream. But that day, Gurdjieff released him. He said, now you start meditating. Sometimes he used to force people to do such purposeless things that they will drive you crazy. He will tell them to dig a ditch one day, and another day to fill it back, and third day to dig it again, and the fourth day to fill it back. And it will continue for months. People who are too much rationalistic will say this is absurd. They will leave. Only people who are really surrendered, they will continue without raising any question. And if you can follow a master to such an extent that you don't ask, you don't raise a question, you simply think that there must be something to it. When he says dig the ditch, the whole day, 8 hours, 10 hours work, and then fill it again, and then dig it again, and fill it again, what he is doing? He is trying to pull you out of your reasoning. Superhuman effort. For 3 months, somebody will be doing the same thing every day. You can just understand, after 3 months, that man will be totally different. Now he is ready for meditations. Gurdjieff will not give you meditations just in the beginning. First he will test you from every point. From every corner of your being he will see whether you can surrender. Surrender to some absurdity also. He helped many people. He was the right person for this age, particularly in the West. Don't try to see any contradiction between the two. There is none. All awakened people have been sowing the same thing, saying the same thing. Their words differ. They may appear contradictory to you. They cannot be contradictory. If they appear contradictory to you, then something is wrong with your reasoning. Go deeper. One day you will come to the strata where you will see that they are saying the same thing. Gurdjieff says, do as much as you can. And Lao Tzu says, don't do. Let things happen. And both are saying the same thing. Because only after doing too much, you will be able to understand Lao Tzu. Lao Tzu would have understood Gurdjieff perfectly. If they both have worked in collaboration, that would have been perfect. That's what I am trying to do. Gurdjieff, Lao Tzu, both. That's why you will see many contradictions in me. In Lao Tzu, there is no contradiction in himself. In Gurdjieff, there is no contradiction in himself. If you bring them together, then you see the contradiction. But in me, you will see contradiction every moment. There is no need to bring any other enlightened man to find contradictions. I am contradictory. Because I see that life is polar. You have to be forced to the utmost of doing. Only then surrender happens. Let go becomes possible. The ninth question, how can man best reach the stars? There is no need. You are already on the star earth. There is no need to go anywhere. And wherever you will go, you will be the same. Move within. Earth itself is a star. Because it is too close to you, you don't see it. When you will go to another star, you will not see that star. It will be too close. Then the earth will look like a star from that faraway space. Man cannot see that which is close. Man can see only that which is far away and distant. Try to see that which is close. In fact, try to see that which is you. You already are on a star. You already belong to the stars. There is no need to go anywhere. And all this search of going to moon and to Mars is in a subtle sense foolish. The real thing is to change yourself, not to go somewhere else, because you will remain the same. Wherever you go, you will create the same world, the same miserable world there. Stars won't help. Only an inner transformation can. The 10th question, I feel so much freedom and love to hear you say, if you do not like to meditate until the right time you feel like doing so, there is no harm in doing something else that interests you. But regretfully, how and why is it that some of your disciples who do not meditate expect others to do so, at times through indirect criticism, as if it is a must, because they have much compassion for you. What I say may look good to you, but what they say, please follow them. That will do good to you. And what I am saying, you will be able to understand only. It always looks good if I say be free. If I say don't do anything. If I say you are already that which is to be achieved. It feels very good, ego enhancing. And when my disciples say to meditate, to do something, it becomes difficult. Because you don't want to do anything. You want to be lazy. And if this is the situation, you will not be able to understand me, what I am saying. But you can misunderstand it. When my disciples are saying something, they are saying something which is practical, which you cannot miss it. There is some meaning. It is not they who are saying it to you. It is again I who is saying through them to you to do it. And don't be bothered whether they are doing meditations or not. That is for me to think about. You need not bother. If you can do something for yourself, that is enough. And what I am saying will be possible for you to understand only when you have done deep meditations, otherwise not. And this is a question not from a sannyasin but a visitor. In fact, I am not very much interested in visitors. Because there is every possibility that they will misunderstand me. Unless you are closely working with me, ready to move into deeper depths of your being, whatever I am saying can be even harmful to you. Because I am saying for those who are working, who are making every effort to change their being, they will be able to understand me rightly what I am saying. But visitors come. Listening is good because you don't have to do anything. I talk here, you simply sit there and listen. You become knowledgeable, you go home, you know more. Your ego is enhanced. But if somebody says to you, meditate, then there is trouble. And particularly Indians, they think that they know all about meditation just because they are born in India. You don't know. And remain alert. Soon the West will be knowing more than you. Because you are too much egoistic about that you know already. So what is the need to do? West is more humble to learn and to seek and to practice and to move in a discipline. You are at the most are ready to listen. And that too, you will listen only when it suits. If it doesn't suit you, then the man is wrong. You are always right. If it suits you, then it is right. If it doesn't suit you, then he must be wrong. Because the truth is already with you. This smug-mindedness has been falling every day lower and lower. And soon, the unfortunate moment will come when you will have to go to the West to learn meditation. But before that happens, few possibilities are still here. Don't waste them. Listening is beautiful because nothing to be done. You simply sit there. Even you can sleep and listen. You can rest. But to do meditation is to move in inner turmoil, chaos. Of that you are afraid what people will say. Others will laugh that you and jumping and dancing and catharsis. No, it is for foolish people, not for you. You are already too knowledgeable. Drop all this knowledge. Otherwise, listening to me won't help much. What I am saying is true. But first you have to do much, only then you can understand what it is which Lao Tzu calls doing by non-doing. The last question. How is progress, whether in civilization, culture or religion, possible if we accept life as it is and do not seek to change it in any way? There is no need for any progress. Progress is the most false god created by man. There is no need. What does progress mean? Progress means deep down to sacrifice the present for the future. You sacrifice today to live tomorrow. Then tomorrow again, it is not tomorrow, it is today. You sacrifice it again for tomorrow. The father sacrifices for the children. The children will sacrifice for their own children, and nobody lives it ever. One generation sacrifices for another because there has to be progress, and then nobody lives it ever. There is no need for progress. The very word progress moves you into the future. And there can never be an end to it. You cannot come to a state when you can say now the progress has been achieved. Because progress is not a thing to be achieved. It is a process. So now everybody can enjoy the progress has been achieved. It will never come. Progress will remain always a process. This is how up to now humanity has tried to live. In the name of progress, all bliss has been sacrificed. No need to sacrifice anymore. Forget about the future. You live for yourself. While the time is there, you live totally. Your children will live their own life. Don't sacrifice yourself. Because sacrificing fathers are very dangerous. They never forgive their children. And then those children are always against those fathers because they cannot forget this attitude that you have sacrificed. Everybody has been taught to become martyr for somebody else. This is foolish, simple, sheer stupidity. But it goes in the name of progress. Don't bother about progress. The birds have not bothered. What is wrong with them? What they have been missing. The trees have not bothered. The Himalayas have not bothered. What they are missing. They enjoyed 1,000 years before. They enjoyed always. They are enjoying now. They will be enjoying in the future forever and ever. only man has got a disease called progress. It is a cancerous thing. Then you go on sacrificing. You say, how can I enjoy? Today I have to work hard so that tomorrow there is money and then I will enjoy. But that tomorrow never comes. Then how can you enjoy? You have children. You have to work hard so that your children can enjoy. And they will have their own children. And their own children will have their own children. When it comes to the point where anybody can enjoy, your mother sacrificed for you. She was a martyr. She never had a single moment of delight because she was working for you and sacrificing for you. Now, are you enjoying because your mother sacrificed herself for you? You are not enjoying because she has taught you the trick to sacrifice yourself for somebody else, for the country, for the religion, for humanity, but sacrifice. Gods have been different, but sacrifice has remained the same. Sometimes it is the nation, sometimes it is humanity, sometimes it is Christianity, sometimes it is Islam. But sacrifice. One secret has always remained with man, and which has been killing him, poisoning him. No more talk about sacrifice, no more talk about progress. You live your life, if something happens out of it, it is okay. If nothing happens, you are not responsible. You are not running the world. And all that you call progress, big houses, technology, big cars, have they added in any way into human bliss? In fact, on the contrary, they have killed all possibility. You may be living in a palace, but palace is not happiness. You may be moving in a Rolls Royce, but to move in a Rolls Royce is not to be blissful. You can be as miserable there as anywhere. The whole question is how to make man more happy. And if this progress goes on poisoning you, man can never be happy. It is a trick, a conspiracy to force you to commit suicide for others and then force others to commit suicide for others. The whole world has become hell. Drop this continuous madness about progress. Everything is good as it is today, and you are here for just now. Live it. And out of your living, if something happens, it is beautiful. And I say it will happen out of living. But I don't call it progress, because the very word is ugly. It is future-oriented. I call it rather growth, not progress. You live this moment, out of that life grows another moment. Of course, it is going to be finer and richer than the first. Then you live it more deeply, because you have learned how to live deeply. You are learning constantly, and each moment becomes more and more intense. And out of that moment, another moment is born. Out of today is born tomorrow, richer, more blissful, more ecstatic. And out of you are born your children, and you give them birth in ecstasy. You were not in fact trying to give them birth. You were enjoying your love. In fact, you were not concerned directly for them. Out of your ecstasy, out of your orgasmic experience, they are born. You share your ecstasy with them. They grow with you. They learn how to be ecstatic, how to be blissful. Their children will grow with them. This is growth, not progress. In progress, non-essential things grow and the essential dies. In growth, the non-essentials are non-essentials. If they are there, good. If they are not there, even better. But the essential grows. What is essential? Essential is bliss. Essential is your inner happiness. Essential is orgasmic experiences, peak experiences. You don't have big palaces, but you have peak experiences. That's perfect. You may be living in a hut. That will do. You may not have very expensive clothes, but they are not needed. But you have a rich being. A different, totally different dimension opens with growth. Up to the last generation, progress has been dominating human mind, but for the new generation, growth has become a greater, meaningful word. All growth groups, encounters, growth trainings, therapies, they are not worried about progress. They are worried about growth. And to me, that word is meaningful. Growth is present-based. Progress is future-oriented. Growth is out of living, and progress is out of sacrificing. Growth is life. Progress is society. Enough for today.